BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, it's The Bigger Picture and it's Mira Seviso. The ankylosing spondylitis comes from the Greek word ankylos, meaning stiff, spondylos, meaning vertebrae. Now, running the gamut of symptoms from back pain to curvature of the spine, it is a chronic illness and one in which there is no cure as yet. Dr. Muhammad Asim Khan is a rheumatologist who is both a physician and a patient in his relationship with the illness, and he offers his unique take on this condition. Now, Dr. Asim, what is ankylosing spondylitis?
Well, ankylosing spondylitis is a chronic disease affecting the joints, and it usually begins at the prime of one's life, late teens or early 20s, and it usually presents with the chronic back pain, but it can have other presenting manifestations also. And being a chronic illness, it gradually over time can result in limitation of motion of the spine in particular, because spinal involvement is one of the hallmarks of this disease. But it can sometime affect other joints, but more often the hip and the shoulders, much less often the other joints of the extremities.
Right. And I also understand it exclusively, more often than not, as you mentioned, involves the spine, but it could also affect a particular tissue type, the HLA-B27. Now, what is that really?
HLA-B27 is a genetic marker. This is a perfectly normal gene that is distributed widely, and this illness is more common in people who are born with this gene called HLA-B27. And the more HLA-B27 you have in a population in general, the more disease you have in this population.
Right. Can you test for this gene?
Yes, it can easily be tested. But there is no reason for people to be tested for this gene, because overwhelming majority of people with this gene never have any problem with
right.
their joints.
Okay.
So more than 95% of the HLA-B27 positive population in the world remain unaffected with this disease.
Right. So you only sort of find out when you're inflicted with a certain condition.
Well, even then, you don't need to find out, because you can recognize the disease by its presentation. But sometimes testing for this gene can be helpful in situations where the patient's presentation may not be classical, maybe a little bit atypical. So this test can work as one of the tests as an aid to diagnosis of this disease.
Ankylosing spondylitis, is it an autoimmune disease?
In a sense, it is, but it's not classical autoimmune disease like lupus, which is quite common in Malaysia.
SLE.
Or also called SLE.
Yeah.
So this disease, there is immunological aberration, but it doesn't fall in the category of the classical autoimmune diseases.
Okay. And, this condition, how is it different from rheumatoid arthritis, for an example?
Rheumatoid arthritis is just the opposite of ankylosing spondylitis. Rheumatoid arthritis is also chronic arthritis. It more often affects the limb joints, hands, feet, knees, elbows, wrists, but spares the spine. And it is a disease that is more common in women. And it is a disease that occurs in later part of one's life, usually in 40s and 50s, although it can occur at any age.
Right.
And also, it has association with totally different genetic background.
When you said earlier it inflicts teenagers to up to the age of in their 20s, why is it the younger generation seems to get this problem earlier in life compared to, something like rheumatoid arthritis?
Well, the Almighty in his or her wisdom has done things that we haven't a clue yet why. There are various factors that can result in disease. This particular disease, like rheumatoid arthritis, there is genetic contribution, but having the right gene is not enough. There has to be something in the environment that can trigger the disease. So this disease is multifactorial. So not having the right trigger may not make somebody get the disease, mm-hmm. even though they may be genetically more prone to it.
Right.
So there is a question of the right seed and the right soil.
Sure.
And for some reason, spondylitis tends to occur at younger age. Very uncommon for the symptoms to begin for the first time after age 40 or 45. While rheumatoid arthritis can occur at any age, but the peak age of onset approaches late 40s, 50s.
Sure. And more men seem to, you know, suffer from ankylosing spondylitis. 200 men in one, one in 500 women. Is there a reason why men seem to be more prone to it?
Well, the women get more often rheumatoid arthritis. Almighty, in his or her fairness, doesn't want to spare men. So this disease is up to three times more common in men, while rheumatoid arthritis is up to three times more common in women.
Right.
And we don't know why, but one thing is true. In men, the disease tends to occur, progress more rapidly. They tend to fuse up their spine much more rapidly. In women, they have all the symptoms, just like men, but their disease can have a little bit atypical presentation. It may progress more slowly, so it may be under-recognized. But when you do epidemiologic studies, you find that the distribution of the disease may not be much different.
Right.
But in men, the disease is more recognized.
Sure.
In women, it is under-recognized.
So the severity from one person to another sort of varies?
That's right. There might well be genetic factors that influence the severity of the disease, mm-hmm. the clinical manifestation of the disease.
Right. Do you think the condition has attracted more attention recently?
It has become a little bit more, yes, there is a little bit more interest in this disease, but still it is not as well recognized as rheumatoid arthritis or SLE.
Right. I understand that it's a form of arthritis. Why does it most often affect the spine and, you know, not really the other areas? You mentioned it is not exclusively to the spine. It does affect other areas as well. But why the spine?
It appears that in addition to having genetic background and environmental trigger, for some reason, the site of inflammation in this disease has the predilection for places where ligaments, tendons attach to bone. The medical term for that is enthesis. In the spine, we have lots of ligaments that hold our vertebral bodies together,
yep.
so that there is a lot of mechanical stress. So it looks like that presence of the stress at the attachment of ligaments, tendons, muscles to the bone initiates inflammatory process that can then, in some people, become chronic and progressive. And since spine is full of ligaments, that's one explanation, but it doesn't explain a lot of other manifestations of the disease. For example, typically sacroiliac joints are involved in this disease, and sacroiliac joints have hardly any mobility. Only maybe in women, when they are delivering their baby, the pelvis opens up a little bit for the head of the child to facilitate its exit. But why sacroiliac joints are involved, we don't know as well. But generally speaking, there is this excessive increased predilection for inflammation to occur at the bony attachment of ligaments, tendons. So one of the manifestations of this disease, especially in teenagers, may be Achilles tendon inflammation, heel pain, pain on the at the sites of attachment of muscles and tendons to the rim of the pelvis in the back over the spine. So those are all sites of enthesis.
Sure.
So inflammation at enthesis, called enthesitis, can be an early or chronic persistent manifestation of this disease.
But these sort of symptoms can mimic other problems as well. How do you know it's, you know, ankylosing spondylitis?
Yes, that's true. This disease is almost a champion when it comes to delay in its diagnosis. The average delay in diagnosis, even nowadays, is about 10 years in most of the countries, even developed parts of the world. So anywhere 5 to 10 years go by before the disease gets recognized, because one of the early manifestations is back pain. Now, back pain is so common, this is not the commonest cause of back pain. But it is an important cause, and it requires totally different treatment. So a lot of young people with back pain, they may not know where to go. Nowadays, medicines are available over the counter. They can buy without prescription. That can alleviate their symptoms. When they do decide to go to doctors, many doctors are not aware of this disease. And so the diagnosis is missed. There are many other reasons as well. So there is need to educate healthcare providers about this disease. Now that we have effective treatment, and it looks like the earlier you begin, the better is the outcome. So it is very important to recognize the disease. And I hope during my stay in Malaysia, I will be interacting with almost all the rheumatologists. So I hope to have them, and they are already very well qualified. They know about this disease. And I'm going to emphasize how we can recognize the disease the moment the patient walks into our door to be seen, because we have better imaging techniques now to recognize the disease even before the x-rays show the classical picture of this disease.
Wow. Is this new technology?
It is MRI, magnetic resonance imaging.
Sure.
And there are different versions of it that can help recognize the disease before x-rays become abnormal, so that there is no more 5-10 years of delay if the patient is lucky enough to be seen by somebody who knows about this disease.
Who can identify it.
Who can identify
it. Right. You know, Dr. Asim, I'm sure patients feel resentment that diagnosis is not made early enough, and, you know, hence treatment starts late. You actually suffer from ankylosing spondylitis. How old were you when you were diagnosed with it?
I was 12 years old when my symptoms began, and it was not recognized till I became a medical student. And only during the time of the medical training, when I got in contact with the physician who was very knowledgeable, that is when my disease was recognized. So it was, diagnosis was delayed by 6 years. Mm-hmm. So I was 18 years young when the disease was finally recognized. Mm-hmm. And so I have had this illness now for 56 years. So please don't add up the two numbers, because you know that I turned 68 this year.
You're doing very well.
Well, I keep on what they say in the West. I am hanging in there.
As they would say in America.
Yeah, that's right.
Yep. You know, were you born and bred in America, or did you come, did you migrate to America at some stage?
Well, I was born to become a refugee, thanks to the British. And when they left South Asia, they gave our Muslim lands to the other side. So I became a refugee. Mm-hmm. And I was 3.5 years old. So I grew up in Pakistan, and Pakistan gave me almost free medical education. So when I graduated, I volunteered to serve in the army, not letting my nation know that I had ankylosing spondylitis.
Right.
Because I wanted to serve them in the need at that time, because the neighboring country had attacked my nation. Mm-hmm. So after having served in army for 2 years, I went to UK, and I have British training, but I did not like the British food. So,
but there's a lot of Pakistani food there now.
Well, but there are other reasons also, but I have a sense of humor. I hope the audience have already figured out. In hindsight, I should have stayed in England, because when I went to USA, food was free at the hotel. So I ate also Kentucky Fried Chicken. I would buy the whole bucket of Kentucky Fried Chicken. And that day, it was so tasty that it was finger-licking good. So I did clog up my arteries before I turned 50. So I think if I'd stayed in England, where they will give me thin slice of lamb that used to smell so bad that it was served with the mint jelly. And to fill the plate, they had two small potatoes and one Brussels sprout on one side, one Brussels sprout on the other. I think I would have stayed healthier, and my coronary arteries would not have blocked.
Coming up, we'll find out more about ankylosing spondylitis on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Good afternoon. It's The Bigger Picture, and it's Mira Sivasodhi. With me is Dr. Muhammad Asim Khan. He's a rheumatologist, and we are sort of exploring ankylosing spondylitis. Now, it is somewhat like an autoimmune disease, not quite, but, you know, affects the spine more often than not, especially among the teenage years and going into your 20s. Now, Dr. Asim, what was the consequence? I mean, would you consider yourself lucky that you sort of managed to diagnose ankylosing spondylitis in yourself after just 6 years? I mean, what was the consequence of the delay of 6 years for you?
Well, I didn't recognize the disease myself. The physician that I consulted, professor of medicine, he recognized the disease. But I did suffer a lot during those 6 years of undiagnosed phase of my disease. To give you a few examples, mm-hmm. I was under care of a professor of orthopedics who wasn't familiar with this disease. He never really took my full history. He probably never fully examined. He would give me different forms of treatment that wouldn't work. So one time he decided that because my chest was hurting as well, I couldn't, my hip joints were sore, he thought I may have tuberculosis. So he gave me anti-tuberculosis treatment. By that time, I was a medical student, so I would inject streptomycin myself intramuscularly every day. I would take a couple of other medicines, and I took it the whole course for 1 year. It made no difference. Mm-hmm. Then he decided to start giving me honey. Honey, not by spoon, but intravenously. He would show me the vial imported from West Germany. And that infusion, luckily, didn't kill me. But I can tell you it made no difference. But thanks to this infusion of honey, I am so happy and so sweet since then.
But why honey? What was he thinking at that time?
There are some cultural situations. People have thought for a long time that honey can cure a lot of diseases. So in Germany, there was a company that used to sell honey for infusion. So at least those infusions will not kill people.
Right.
And it was sterilized version of honey.
Just
but
strange.
It didn't make any difference to me.
Yeah.
Only when my physician recognized the disease, he gave me an anti-inflammatory medicine that had become available those days called phenylbutazone. And it was very effective. And I was literally running like a horse. Mm-hmm. It was so good. But it was symptomatic treatment. And I managed to finish my medical school and then, as I said earlier, served in the army for a couple of years. And it was, so it is a very, very good medicine. We don't use it nowadays because it has more potential side effects. But there are cousins of this medicine and similar medicines called non-steroidal anti-inflammatory medications mm-hmm. that help. And they were used, that was the only treatment for this illness for about 50-60 years. And now finally, a different group of drugs have become available, a type of biologics called TNF inhibitors.
Right.
And they are dramatically effective. But again, these forms of treatment don't cure the disease. It's a chronic disease, and patients do need further long-term.
It's more treatment. Management, would you say?
Much better management. But these drugs have their own potential untoward side effects. Mm-hmm. So the doctors have to know how to use these drugs. And if the joints get fused, like the hip joints, results of hip joint surgery is pretty good. Because the spine tends to fuse, patients have to avoid injuring themselves. Mm-hmm. If they slip and fall, even trivial trauma can lead to fracture of their spine.
Right. Past 50 years have passed. How have you managed it from the age of 18?
Well, I always look at glass half full, so I have done everything I could. And I have enjoyed life, and I had my both hip joints replaced when I was in mid-30s, and subsequently, recently, I ended up having revision. So one of the revisions, unfortunately, didn't go well, so mm-hmm. I'm walking with a walker of a type which has three wheels, and so I'm traveling all over, and life can be difficult for everybody, but I can say I've been very lucky that, number one, I became a physician myself. Mm-hmm. Number two, I have always empathy for those who suffer with any illness because I have been a patient myself since age 12 and I've been doctor since age 21. And I decided to choose rheumatology as my subspecialty, which is care of people with rheumatic diseases. And so I have the advantage of having a patient suffering from an illness that is my main areas of interest, and luckily there is more effective treatment. So nowadays I've decided since this year to travel and speak and disseminate knowledge about this disease, because I want to be a poster child for ankylosing spondylitis.
I'm sure you already are. Are you on TNF inhibitors?
I am not on TNF inhibitors because I needed them 50 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
At the moment, my whole spine is totally fused. There is no joint in my spine left that is flexible. So when I nod my head, actually I'm bending my hip joint and I can't turn my neck. So luckily, peripheral joints are not involved in patients with this illness, but the spine fuses up. So it does impair, and I have to be very careful not to slip and fall.
Right. Is it just genes that bring about this condition, or do other factors contribute to it?
As I said earlier, it's a multifactorial disease, so there are non-genetic factors.
Mm-hmm.
But among the genes, HLA-B27 is one of the genes. It plays a major role, but you need additional genes.
Sure.
So it is multigenic. Thus far, up to 6 genes have been recognized, and there are more to be recognized.
Mm-hmm.
And the more genetic material you have that predisposed to the disease that you get from your parents, and you have to be unlucky enough to be exposed to something in the environment that triggers, and we don't know what the trigger is for this condition, and only that subset develop the disease. So sometimes the disease can occur within families mm-hmm. because of the genetic factors.
Does it lead to other complications?
The disease is a systemic disease. Although most of the patients have only joint symptoms, some patients can have what we call extra-articular features. For example, up to one-third of the patients may get certain inflammation in their eye, usually one eye, but next attack could be the other eye, and it's called arthritis or acute anterior uveitis
mm-hmm.
as an example of extra-articular manifestation. This disease can be associated sometime with psoriasis, because people with psoriasis are more likely to get arthritis, and one of the type of arthritis they can get is spondylitis also.
Right.
And also people with Crohn's disease or ulcerative colitis can sometime get arthritis, including this type of arthritis.
Right. Would you consider those flares? Is it the same thing?
Yeah, many autoimmune type of diseases and arthritis included, you can have ups and downs. You can have inflammation, and especially early stages.
Mm-hmm.
And then patients may be better for weeks, and then they flare up. But with passage of time in spondylitis, those flares tend to disappear, because you are ending up in this chronic phase where gradually over time the spine fuses and the symptoms of pain and inflammation go away, because everything is fused up
right.
in this disease. While in rheumatoid arthritis, the inflammation leads to erosion, destruction of the bone. In spondylitis, it's the other way around. The inflammation is followed by excessive bone formation. So sites of inflammation fuse up.
Right. So you're in no pain.
That's right. So patients with advanced disease have no pain. So at this stage, if a patient gets pain, you better suspect a fracture that could have happened, or a cancer, or some other thing, or some bone disease that is causing pain.
Right. If you detect it early enough, Dr. Asim, would you be able to manage it better? And will it progress? Will it slow down the progress of the deterioration? Condition.
Yeah, early diagnosis is absolutely essential. Even if we can't alter the outcome, we will prevent wrong treatment.
Mm-hmm.
So nobody would be getting honey infused into them or self-injecting them.
Imported from Germany.
Yeah. So there is more effective treatment. The outcome has improved vastly. Years ago, the disease used to be so bad, even in developed parts of the world. when there was only Tylenol and aspirin, mm-hmm. patients used to fuse up completely, like a log of wood.
Right.
One of the patients told me my grandfather had a so severe disease that the only things he could move were his eyes.
Wow.
And they had to remove his incisors and the front teeth so that he could be tube-fed for the rest of his life, because the temporomandibular joints, the jaw joints, fused up as well.
Mm-hmm.
That thing nowadays rarely happens. Mostly is seen in villages where the pharmacy has only Tylenol or aspirin. They don't have anti-inflammatory medications.
What about mortality rate? Would you say it's high?
It does decrease the lifespan, mm-hmm. just like rheumatoid arthritis does, or any chronic inflammation, because chronic inflammation can increase the risk of coronary artery disease. They can't exercise that well.
Mm-hmm.
And in this disease, you can have all the time risk of injury, falling, fracturing, and that can lead to paralysis if you fracture the neck. And there are also, if people smoke while they have this disease, their chest has limited expansion, they are more likely to get pneumonia and they can die from it. So there is decreased mortality, but it is primarily observed in those with severe disease, because mild disease is not recognized that well.
Right.
So people with milder disease, or those whose treatment is handled effectively, they don't smoke and they don't get frequent infections and they don't have physical injury, the outcome may be just same as that of the rest of the population.
Besides anti-inflammatories and, of course, TNF inhibitors, mm-hmm. I mean, can a chiropractor or an osteopath sort of help relieve the symptoms?
Don't mention the name of chiropractor or osteopath, because ankylosing spondylitis patients should never be seen by a chiropractor.
Why?
Because they can break the spine of these patients.
Oh, dear.
They can injure their back, because this disease is not due to misfit of the facet joints or vertebral bodies.
It's fusing.
It is inflammation. And these patients who have been unlucky to go to chiropractor, get their back manipulated, they then never go back, because they are worse off after. Some of them have had a fracture of their back caused by manipulation by chiropractor. So the only people who are knowledgeable of this disease are the rheumatologists at this stage. Unfortunately, that is the case now. But my aim is to educate the primary care doctors so that they can recognize the disease and send it to the specialists who know how to handle the disease. And patients can be managed by primary care doctors when there is close interaction with the rheumatologist.
So no form of exercise is going to help?
No,
either?
This disease requires exercise for the rest of their lives, but the right type of exercise. Luckily, in Malaysia, the type of weather you have, the affluence you have, which Malay would say, mashallah, the nation is progressing very well. There are a lot of swimming pools,
mm-hmm.
and clean swimming pools with chlorine and filters. So long-term swimming is the best exercise, using bed which is firm, trying to keep the posture as straight as possible, because even though you may fuse, at least the posture will be pretty straight.
Right.
And also preventing the vitamin D deficiency, taking good amount of milk and calcium, and treating if there is vitamin D deficiency.
Mm-hmm.
So those things will decrease the problem with the bones. And so lifelong exercise. And certain exercises may not be good, like contact sports, because you can injure yourself.
Right.
If a patient is recognized with this illness, if he or she does not know how to swim, they should be made to learn how to swim.
Mm-hmm.
But if they hate water, there are many other types of exercises.
Sure.
So physical therapist is very important in educating the patient about the exercises that they need to do for the rest of their lives. But patients have to also be knowledgeable about this disease so that they will comply with the treatment. So one of the things I did was I did write a book for patients with this illness, and it has been translated into many languages, including Japanese, Portuguese, Spanish, and so on, even Persian.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need to it would be not wise for me to mention the publisher and so on, because I'm not here to publicize my book.
But what is it
titled? There are many. Well, it's called Ankylosing Spondylitis, the facts. It gives the facts about ankylosing. But there are good sources of inflammation on the internet, but a physician should educate the patient not to go to certain websites that are not ethical, and they are there to sell the patient snake oil and everything else. So
like the honey.
Yeah, that's right. So the best, there are a few good websites. One of them is called spondylitis.org. Mm-hmm. So www.spondylitis.org. There's a website www.hlab27.com. Which gives information about just simple aspects of this disease and describe what is HLA-B27.
Sure. When you talk about surgery, are you referring to just things like hip replacements and things like that?
That's right. And one needs to know or go to a surgeon who knows how to do the hip joint replacement. I had been lucky enough to get my surgery done by somebody who is internationally renowned in this aspect. But I did make one blunder. One of the revisions, I ended up getting it done not by him, because my cardiologist wanted it to be done when he's around. And unfortunately, that has led to very bad outcome, because the surgeon didn't know how to do the procedure very well. So, unfortunately, we all sometimes make these decisions. But I look forward. Still, the glass is half full.
Of course. Does it lead to heart disease or lung
earlier, it does increase the risk of heart disease because of the facts that we have already discussed. Mm-hmm. But also, rarely, some patients may get inflammation of the valve which separates the heart from the aorta. Mm-hmm. So it's a one-way valve mechanism. So that valve is called aortic valve. Mm-hmm. So rarely, maybe 1-2% of the patients may have changes in the valve, so it becomes dysfunctional. So the blood will go out, but then it would come back a little bit. It's called aortic incompetence. Some patients may have problem with the heart conduction, so the heart rate may slow down.
Right.
And it's called heart block.
Right. When you talk about TNA inhibitors, what is it actually doing in your condition?
TNF inhibitors. Yeah. Tumor necrosis factor was one of the factors that was discovered to be pro-inflammatory in many rheumatic diseases, including rheumatoid arthritis and ankylosing spondylitis. So to control the inflammation, if it can't be controlled otherwise, these biologics are very effective. But we had hoped that once you control inflammation, you will stop bony progression. That has not been materialized yet.
Okay.
So it looks like that the factors that lead to excessive bone formation may be different. So a lot of work is going on to see how we can then stop the bony replacement, the bony fusion, because inhibiting the tumor necrosis factor alone is not enough to stop the progression of the disease.
Right. And I know you've said this before, but I'm going to ask you again, what role does a rheumatologist play in assisting and managing the disease?
First of all, most of the patients, the diagnosis is delayed very long. Mm-hmm. So rheumatologists can recognize the disease early, prevent wrong treatment, advise the patient the need for total compliance, not only with the medicines, but with the physical therapy, with the exercises that they have to do for the rest of their life. And that if one medicine doesn't work, one can try another. And some people do very well with some type of non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, so-called NSAIDs, than another type. So aim is to find the right mix of treatment for the patient. And compliance is very important.
Your final message, as a rheumatologist as well as a patient of ankylosing spondylitis, what would be your takeaway message?
My takeaway message is that back pain is extremely common, and this is not the commonest cause of back pain. So my plea is that the primary care doctors would listen to the patient, and they should have an examining room where there's no clock on the wall. And so if they let the patient speak and inquire a little bit features about their back pain that indicate that their back pain is due to inflammation, not due to the ubiquitous common cause of back pain. And so that should alert these primary care doctors that this patient needs further studies. And these are the patients, if they are referred early to rheumatologists, the disease can be recognized very early and the outcome would be hopefully much better and wrong treatment will be prevented.
It has been a pleasure speaking with you.
Well, thank you very much. I very much appreciate. Thank you.
Dr. Muhammad Asim Khan, a rheumatologist on ankylosing spondylitis on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, The Business Station.